left. Back on phono, a weak input to the right, nothing on the left.
On a radio, on apparently the left-hand channel, with no means of changing to the right-hand channel. Now trying...
Testing with the microphone under the wind light. Under the wind light. 1, 2, 3. Testing handheld close speech on the GDM whatever, Grundig microphone. 1, 2, 3. From another world. Testing on distance speech on the right-hand channel. About to unplug. Bringing the right channel down to a sensible level also. Right. That's the right channel. Okay. Stop. Testing using the microphone under the wind lamp on the channel 3/4. Now changing over. Channel 3/4. Now changing over. Microphone testing at on the TK145, channel 3/4. Changing over. Once more on 3/4. And now bringing the microphone close to a distance of about 6 inches from the mouth on 3/4. And now testing once more on the microphone on channel 3/4 on the TK145.
Good afternoon, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. This program repeats on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. And can also be heard from my website www.williamenglish.com. In autumn 1957, Captain Frank Morris Henry Nakom Urquhart Seddon Royal Signals retired, travelled to Rome via Hildesheim in Germany, driving a Rolls-Royce, which in 1959 was already an antique and averaged something like 6 miles to the gallon. In the back of this behemoth of the road, Morris had installed a working television set, in spite of never watching television himself. He was accompanied by his aunt, Elsa Dyker. Morris's sister, Cecilia, had divorced her first husband, Bob Foley, and had just split up with her new Italian partner. She was living in Rome, and an endless diary of cocktail parties and socialising amongst minor and major aristocrats had encouraged her towards total inebriation. Morris spent several weeks with Cecilia and, as a result, wrote the following typewritten text to a prospective sanatorium in 1958, soon after returning to England. Ideally, the text should be read by Morris, but as he died in March of this year, that is no longer possible. The text makes reference to tape recordings Morris made at the time, which have yet to surface. Page 1. A record of strange incidents involving Mrs. Cecilia Margarita Anne Yolanda Foley née Seddon, whilst under the influence of alcohol and or other substances. Prepared at the request of Dr. M.M. Glatt, DPM of St. Marylebone's Hospital for Psychiatry and Child Guidance, 48 Cosway Street, Marylebone Road, NW1. Telephone Paddington 8854. This record has been prepared by Captain Morris Frank Seddon, her only brother, of Datchet Cottage, Datchet, Buckinghamshire. It has been translated from the Italian notes which he made while staying with Mrs. Foley in Rome. The period covered in this first record is from September 1957 to January 1958. During July, August, and September 1957, whilst in Germany, I received a succession of telegrams and desperate telephone calls and letters from my sister, who was living in Rome. The gist of these was to the effect that she wished me to go to Rome urgently, as she was ill, allegedly from Asiatic flu, which at that time was prevalent in several countries, including Italy. I packed my baggage into my large and elderly Rolls-Royce motor car and prepared to drive to Rome. I took with me as my passenger an elderly German lady, Fraulein Elsa Dyker, who lives in Hildesheim in North Germany. Fraulein Dyker is a very old friend of our late German mother and frequently visited us in our pre-war London house, where she stayed, often for quite long periods, beginning in the 1920s. My sister had stayed with the Dyker family in Germany for several weeks at a time, on one or more occasions during the 1930s. On the 12th of September, we arrived in Rome late at night and went to a hotel, as we did not wish to disturb my sister in the middle of the night. The following morning, I rang her up from the hotel. When I told her that Fraulein Dyker had accompanied me on the journey and that I wished to bring her to visit my sister for a few minutes prior to her entraining once more for Germany, my sister flew into violent rage on the telephone and described Fraulein Dyker in the most abusive terms, refusing to see her or to have anything to do with her. I was much taken aback by this behaviour, which was unprecedented, coming as it did from my sister. I later discovered that she was completely drunk at this time, and may possibly have been under other influences as well. Fraulein Dyker was deeply shocked, and when in a later telephone conversation my sister changed her mind and said that she should, after all, visit her, Fraulein Dyker declined to do so, saying that such behaviour was quite intolerable and that she could under no circumstances bring herself to visit someone who had behaved in this way. I therefore took her to the station, and she returned by train to Germany. I next proceeded to my sister's flat at Via Monte della Gioia, number 9 in Rome, where she had been living for several years. On arrival, I was horrified to find her in bed and unconscious. I was unable to waken her. Her Italian maid, Mima Dal Bello, an elderly woman who had worked for her for some years, informed me that she was in a drunken stupor and that she had been in this paralytic drunken state very frequently since July 1957, when my sister and her Italian lover, Commendatore Luciano Zingoni, had parted under conditions of great tragedy. This incident had evidently struck my sister a very hard blow, from which she found herself unable to recover and she had taken extremely heavily to drink. On the 13th of September, my sister's condition was somewhat improved, but she remained exceedingly drunk throughout the day. It should be pointed out that in the main, this record only covers incidents of drunkenness and other strange behaviour, and therefore is not a complete chronicle of days. In between these incidents, there were many days and many occasions on which my sister behaved herself with complete normality and was indeed very much sought after in the international social set of Rome, of which she formed a part. The 18th of September, my sister and I went from Rome to Positano in order to spend a few days by the sea. Sunday, the 22nd of September. In the evening, my sister became pugnaciously drunk. She shouted and yelled, and she threw 1 kilogram of grapes and 3 plates at me. All the plates fell upon the tiled floor of the hotel room in Positano. Cosenza Gestione Fuscioni, and broke into many pieces. I endeavoured to constrain my sister by force to prevent further damage after the first plates had been broken. This proved of no avail, as my efforts merely roused in my sister a still greater fury and brought about even more violence. The 25th of September, my sister was drunk. The 26th of September, we returned from Positano to Rome. The 27th of September, in Rome, drunk from midday until late evening, she telephoned to her former lover. The 30th of September, she telephoned her former lover again, drunk. The 2nd of October, drunk, exceedingly violent, smashed a large glass door in the kitchen. 3rd of October, evening, drunk. On this occasion, she involved herself in a violent scene and argument with her maid after attending a cocktail party elsewhere. The subject matter of the argument, insofar as it may be said to have had any subject at all, was that of whether to eat at home or at a restaurant outside. 4th of October, my sister gave a cocktail party at her flat. After this, she became drunk, and she threatened both her maid and me with her intention to rompere tutto, to break everything. N.B., this threat of hers was by now already well known to me and to her maid from previous evenings. Ultimately, in fact, she did not break anything but became comatose in the drawing room. It was necessary for me to carry her to bed in my arms in an unconscious state. Sunday, the 6th of October. My sister yelled loudly at her maid Mima in the evening concerning an au gratin di macaroni, a dish which was to have been prepared for the evening meal. She became drunk at approximately 21:45 hours after having received the Donna Maria Marigliano del Monte, who arrived at 1900 hours. Monday, the 7th of October, drunk. In a furious temper, she entered the kitchen, threatened the maidservant, screamed, and threw to the floor the large marble slab which constituted the upper surface of the kitchen table. NB. This is an exceedingly heavy object, weighing at least 100 weight. In addition to the marble slab, all the plates, dishes, cutlery, kitchen implements, and foodstuffs which were on the table and were being prepared for dinner fell to the floor in a hideous mess and smashed to many pieces. During the whole of this period, September 1957 to January 1958, I made a number of magnetic tape recordings of incidents which took place in my sister's flat, with a view to their being of use one day to doctors who should eventually have to handle her case. This incident of the breaking marble slab is one of those which was so recorded. After this, I ran to the kitchen and forcibly restrained my sister's arms to prevent her from doing further damage to her property or that of the owner of the flat. This, in accordance with the usual pattern, still further enraged her, so that when we came to the hallway, despite my attempts to restrain her, she succeeded in grabbing an ornamental electric wall lamp fitting, which was built to look like an old-fashioned oil lamp, complete with tall glass chimney. This she smashed to the floor so that the glass chimney was broken and the shade badly bent.
A further test on microphone, this time to avoid hum, the microphone has been positioned on top of the 1959 tape recorder TK-35.
Wednesday the 23rd of October, I went to the firm of Siocetti in the Via Tiburtina, marmorista, that is to say, marble cutters and suppliers, and bought a new slab of marble and brought it back to my sister's flat, where I placed it on her kitchen table in the place of the old slab. The 8th of October, 20:00 hours. This is rather strange, since the preceding entry was the Wednesday, the 23rd of October. We've now gone to the 8th of October, 20:00 hours. I had been out, and on coming in, I found her lying upon the wooden floor in her bedroom, unconscious and drunk, 20:05 hours. With the assistance of Mimma, her maid, I succeeded in raising her from the floor and placing her upon the bed, where she remained for some hours before recovering consciousness. The 10th of October, her former lover came at 12:15 hours and made a short visit. He did not remain for lunch. After lunch, my sister shouted at the maidservant, being half drunk. At 20:00 hours, she was drunk again, and notwithstanding her condition, at 20:30 hours, she insisted on going out together with me to keep an appointment for dinner with Major Hugo Anson, who is married to an Italian lady, the widow of a Badoglio, and who lives permanently in Rome. Somehow she managed to get through the evening. I still do not know quite how. The 11th of October. It came to my notice on this day that my sister had been involved on a previous date in the following incident. It must be explained that my sister's maid, Mimma Dal Bello, is a very simple soul coming from the mountains in the north of Italy. This Mima Del Bello has subsequently shown herself to be a person who has the greatest difficulty getting on with other servants generally. She and the female porter of the block of flats in which my sister lived developed a potent mutual hatred. The female porter had her office-cum-spyhole on the ground floor directly opposite the main entrance to the block of flats and very close to the entrance to my sister's flat. My sister had encouraged Mima in her quarrel with the female porter, and it appeared that my sister herself entered into this quarrel in that she had thrown out and broken some full and some empty bottles of wine from the front door of her flat. She had left them strewn and dripping with wine all over the main front entrance hall of the block of flats, directly in front of the porter's room. All this first came to my notice on the 11th of October, when I accompanied my sister at 10 hours to visit the local police station, Questura, Commissariata di Vescovio, where she had an appointment to answer some form of written complaint or charge which had been laid by the porter concerning this incident. I can only presume that she must have been entirely drunk when she did this extraordinary thing. When I questioned her about it, she merely admitted having thrown out the bottles and stated that she had done so because of the ill-tempered behaviour of the female porter. In support of this, I must confess that I always found both the female porter and her husband singularly unhelpful and rather hostile. But on the other hand, I cannot know who was in the right and who was in the wrong in this matter, in the first instance, as my sister and her maid had lived there for years and I was there only a few months. The 12th of October, she received guests in the evening. After they had gone, she appeared to be sober until 22:30 hours. After this, she became drunk. At midnight, she was in a state of exceedingly aggressive drunkenness. On many of these evenings, when she was drunk, she would sit in front of the brand new 21-inch German Philips television receiver, which I had brought for her from Germany, as a present in my car, and which I had installed on arrival for her use.
Viel Spaß beim Hören.
Frequently on these occasions, she would plunge the room in complete darkness and would gaze at the television set without in fact being in any way conscious of what was being transmitted, and frequently would cry desperately with tears pouring down her face for several hours on end. Frequently she would go into a sleepy or comatose condition while doing this, and it would be difficult to rouse her. Sometimes, if the synchronization of the television picture went out of adjustment, she would crawl on all fours or stagger on her legs across the room to the set, where she would kneel in front of it, clawing at the front of the set, at any and all knobs at random, and be quite unable to produce any satisfactory picture on the screen. Notwithstanding this, she would often remain so kneeling before the television set for half an hour or even more. Frequently, I would have to go into the drawing room from my bed at midnight or after to check up on what she was doing, and frequently would have to carry or assist her to her bed. Often she would lie about for hours or even for the whole night, completely or partially undressed, and frequently with no bedclothes. No doubt as a consequence of this, she suffered from persistent colds and perpetually complained of having a temperature. On these occasions, her friends would be told at great length over the telephone about terrible colds and about having the Asiatica, the Asiatic flu. She was very frequently invited to cocktail and dinner parties and other entertainment, and it frequently happened on these occasions that she would be quite unable to attend, either because of drunkenness or because of the aftermath of drunkenness. In the latter case, she would invariably ask me to attend in her stead, and to explain to all who asked after her that she was suffering from Asiatic flu. October 14th. At 19:15 hours, we went out together in her Austin motor car to a cocktail party, which was given by a Scottish couple named Saunders, who have a place in Scotland and are living more or less permanently at Kerr Park 1, Davos Platz, Switzerland, and who are related to Colonel Reggie Fullerton, who was then British military attaché in Rome. The Saunders were visiting on a motor tour of Italy, and they gave their cocktail party at the Colony Bar, Via Ludovisi. At this cocktail party, my sister put up her first public black, in inverted commas, of which I have knowledge, in that she became drunk and incapable of answering or conversing. She was unable to thank her host or hostess, or to say goodbye at the end of the party. I had to heave her up the steep and narrow staircase from the underground room in which the party had been held, and I had to carry her to her motor car, where she lay unconscious in the back seat. 21:30 hours. I drove her to her flat in her car, and as I did not wish to have the public scandal of the porter seeing her arrive in that condition, I first drove to the fringe of the city where I parked the car for half an hour or so, and opened all the windows wide to try and sober her up a bit. I had no success in this, however, and it had now become apparent that unless I was prepared to sit up all night, she would not become sober. And so I took her straight home in her very drunken state and put her to bed. Amongst those present at the party were the Donna Assia Busiri Vici, the wife of an eminent Roman architect, and the Count Dantenberg, who was then the Dutch minister to the Holy See, and others. Wednesday, the 16th of October. My sister's former lover visited her at 12 noon hours. In the afternoon, I went to a cinema. She did not wish to go, and she remained at home. When I came back at 18:30 hours, I found that the maidservant had also been out to visit a hospital, and my sister was in bed drunk in an alcoholic stupor, incapable of conversing. The 17th of October, I went again to a cinema. Once more, my sister would not come with me. She preferred to remain at home, doubtless with the intention of becoming drunk. When I came home, I found her sleeping. I cannot say if she was drunk or not. I did not speak with her. The maidservant showed me certain bottles and explained that my sister had drunk 2.5 bottles, each one 0.7 litres capacity of wine, during my absence. The 18th of October, I went out in the afternoon and returned at 18:55 hours to find my sister half drunk. Saturday, the 19th of October, we went out together to a meal in a restaurant. All went well. Sunday, the 20th of October, my sister was half drunk on two separate occasions on this day. The 21st of October, she was completely sober. The 22nd of October, at 1400 hours, she was drunk and refused to eat anything for lunch. She was offended because the maidservant had informed me that the meal was served on the table before telling her! In the evening, she was sober. The 23rd of October, she was half drunk in the evening. The 25th of October, we went to the sea at Ostia. All went well. The 26th of October, I went alone to a meal at 13:30 hours. The host was Marchese Giulio Marconi, son of the inventor and president of the Italian Marconi Wireless Company. She did not come.
Testing, testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. Using the excessively... Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. Testing 1, 2, 3. Testing microphone.
She did not come, for she said she did not feel well. N.B. Guilio has been a close friend of hers for several years and was much disappointed that she did not come.
Microphone 1, 2. Testing on the Grundig microphone with its greatly extended lead length. With its greatly extended lead length.
The 28th of October.
3, 4, 5.
We went to a cocktail party given by Marijke Purcell. My sister was a quarter to a half drunk that evening. The 30th of October, my sister's birthday, she gave a party in her flat. All went reasonably well.
This has the effect of attenuating the output of the microphone quite markedly. These cables should not normally be extended beyond the standard length.
That magic, I know I always will. No word. I knew it was love at last, at the moment.
And then I wrote ballets, very often because the company needed a ballet. It's as simple as that, you know. Hands up, anyone who can write a ballet.
1st of November. Drunk at 1400 hours and also at 1800 hours. Shortly thereafter, my sister and I motored up to Munich in southern Germany in her Austin. Whilst we were there, we stayed in a small private hotel near to the Englischer Garten. Whilst in Munich, we visited some step relatives of our German mother, namely Frau Therese Nast Kolb and her daughter Gudrun Elsner, née Nast Kolb. My sister had always been convinced, or at least pretended to herself that she was convinced, that our mother's father was French. There had never been any dispute as to the nationality of our mother's mother, Therese Nacom, née Nick, daughter of Professor Wienand Nick, director of music at the Catholic Cathedral of Hildesheim in northern Germany, and papal knight of the Order of St. Gregory the Great. San Gregoriano Magno. My sister liked to believe, however, that our mother's father, Jean Nacom, was a Frenchman, as indeed his name would tend to make one think. I had, however, done some research in Germany into this question and had contacted the registrar of births, deaths and marriages, etc. in Hildesheim, and had verified that, in fact, Johannes Nacom, officially shown in the records as known as Jean, was in fact a German. And whilst he may well have stemmed from Huguenot stock, which was originally French in part, hundreds of years previously, he and his immediate forebears were quite clearly not French, having come from Bonn and the neighbouring small town of Honnef on the Rhine. Now, when I had told my sister this, she had violently disputed it, insisting that our mother's father was French and that consequently our mother was also French, since, according to her, only our grandmother was German. Now, this appears to constitute an idée fixe of my sister, in that she will not accept what is clearly a fact, namely that we are both half German by parentage, a fact of which one ought to be proud rather than otherwise. Now, on the 6th of November, whilst in Munich and at the house of our German relatives, I deliberately questioned our step-great-aunt, the then 80-year-old Frau Nast Kolb, and her relatives on the subject of the nationality of the Nacoms. I did this in the presence of my sister, so that she should hear from another mouth the truth of what I had told her. Frau Nast Kolb confirmed entirely what I had said, and it was clear that these things had mortally offended my sister's feelings. Later that evening, whilst we were in the room which we occupied in the hotel, My sister screamed in a seemingly hysterical manner very loudly for at least 1 hour. She accused me of terrible disloyalty to our dear mother, who died in 1950.
I think not actual word mistakes, just I came in a bar too soon in a couple of places, yes. Which I think was pretty good going after 7 years.
And you had to sing in English while the rest of the cast sang in German, so you were...
The noise was such that I was extremely surprised that we were not evicted on the spot by the hotel keeper. She had consumed alcohol on this occasion. The 7th of November, on the way back from Munich to Rome, whilst we were staying in a hotel in Modena, my sister fell whilst in the shower bath and injured the back of her head, approximately 2,200 hours. She had been drinking. 8th of November, back in Rome, she screamed in a hysterical manner from 2,200 hours until 2,400 hours. She beat frenziedly upon the locked door of my bedroom and through the carpets of her motor car, which was soaked in petrol, in front of my door, in order to afford me the maximum of inconvenience, by reason of the powerful stench of motor spirit. I believe she was drunk. The situation had become intolerable, and I threatened to leave her and go to England. It should be explained that very early after my arrival in Rome, on the occasion of my sister's ex-lover's first visit to her, I had had an interview with him in which he had explained that he was worried about my sister's condition. He stated that she was in no fit state to be left on her own, and he begged me to remain with her as long as possible, in effect to nurse and look after her. Saturday the 9th of November. She remained in bed during the evening. Her head was hurting. Sunday the 10th of November, my sister was drunk, but not bellicose. The 11th of November, she was drunk and violent from 1,400 hours until 2,240 hours. She broke a valuable porcelain tray, metal-framed, used for serving drinks, and she attacked Mimma, her servant. Mimma stated that on the previous evening, my sister, whilst preparing supper, took a piece of bread out of the dog's plate and placed this bread into the soup which we were to eat, which was upon the kitchen table. My sister became furious with Mimma and with me by reason of Mimma having revealed this fact to me, and on several successive occasions threw large quantities of water at Mimma. In all, she threw about 18 litres of water, partly into Mimma's face and partly onto her back. When Mimma hid herself in her bedroom, my sister threw the water underneath the closed door of her bedroom. The servant stated that she was going to denounce my sister immediately to the questura, the police, but did not do so. My sister deliberately poured out the contents of a bottle of wine upon the table. This was the very worst day of my stay up to date. She also threw water at me. The 13th of November. I had a cold and remained for the most part in the flat. The 14th of November, I remained in bed with a cold. In the evening, my sister went out to a cocktail party without me. I felt ill and remained in bed. The 15th of November, I still had a cold. My sister was once more drunk from 2,000 to at least 2,330 hours. The 16th of November, she was drunk at 1,945 hours.
Gili singing the Intermezzo from the Verdi Requiem. Miss Hunter, are you a practical person? Could you look after yourself on this island?
I wouldn't like to, but I'd have to.
The 20th of November, my sister and I both went together with Monsignore Alan Clark, the deputy head of the Collegio Venerabile Inglesi, that is, the English Catholic Priests' Training College in Rome, to attend an audience with His Holiness the Pope at St. Peter's. This was given more especially for foreigners in Rome. In the evening, my sister gave a party at 1,900 hours in her flat. My sister was half drunk, both before and during the party. Some weeks after the party, some friends of ours informed me that they had noticed that my sister was drunk and could not put two words together on the occasion of this party. Those who told me this were Marchese Giulio Marconi of Via Paolo Rubens, 37, Rome, telephone 877-866, and Irene Wasilkiov, Via Lutetia, 11, Rome, telephone 846-448. These are two of her closest friends. The 21st of November, I accompanied an English friend of my sister, namely Mrs. Teresa Ritchie, Catholic, to visit and view St. Peter's. At 1400 hours, I returned to my sister's flat and I found her drunk and on her bed. Saturday the 23rd of November, 2045 hours, my sister and I set out together in my Rolls-Royce, intending to take lunch with some English friends of hers named Darwell, who have a house on the Via Appia Antica, that is, the old Appian Way. We were to have taken with us in the car, in addition, certain friends, including Principessa Vasilchiov. We were to have picked them up at a restaurant in the Piazza Esedra and to have taken them on to the Darwell's party. My sister was already drunk before we set out. For this reason, I drove with the windows of the car wide open so that the fresh air might sober her up before we arrived at the Via Appia, thereby avoiding putting up a black in inverted commas. As we travelled along the Via Salaria, 400 metres after we had set out from the flat, my sister became violent in the motor car. She wished to close the windows. She struck me a violent blow in the face whilst I was driving the heavy car in traffic. I immediately braked the car to a standstill, as in consequence of the blow across my eyes, I was unable to see where I was going. She opened the left-hand front door of the car and precipitated herself into the traffic which was overtaking us on that side of the car. Vehicles driving on the right in Italy, my Rolls-Royce being built for use in England, has right-hand drive. She sprang out whilst the car was still in motion, saying as she did so that she wished to cause an accident and to damage my car. This she very nearly did, in that the overtaking cars had insufficient indication of the sudden stoppage of mine and nearly collided with the left-hand passenger's door, which was suddenly swung open across their path. She returned to her flat on foot. I returned to her flat in my car. There she became bellicose and threw two pictures at Mima and myself, smashing them. With her foot, she deliberately smashed a large passageway door, composed almost entirely of one large sheet of glass. This door was in the passageway leading to the kitchen. She threw a bottle of wine at me. She also threw an electric stove. She fell upon the floor and injured her head. She screamed as if she was mad. She consumed an entire bottle of vermouth and half a bottle of gin and became unconscious upon the couch in the drawing room. She lost blood from the wound in her head. I telephoned for Dr. Angelotti, a fashionable Roman society doctor whom my sister favoured. She stated that he attended the King of Sweden when he was in Rome. The 24th of November, my sister remained in bed. Dr. Angelotti came at 09:30 hours. In the evening, I attended a cocktail party given by the Count and Countess Medici in my sister's stead. The 25th of November, 21:30 hours, my sister became exceedingly bellicose and shouted, inviting me to kill her. Appeared completely mad. She also hid the key to my bedroom, presumably to prevent me from taking refuge there from her, and also removed the pillow from my bed. The 26th of November, she remained in bed and was very sweet to me. We did not go to the reception, which was given by the Dutch ambassador, because my sister's head was still paining her. The 27th of November, I went to two successive parties in my sister's stead. The 29th of November, in the evening, Dr. Angelotti came. Afterwards, I went to a cinema. I returned at 22:15 hours and found my sister half drunk and refusing to eat the evening meal. I had put all the alcohol under lock and key with her agreement in the built-in china cupboard in the hall, and we had agreed that I would only give her out reasonable quantities of alcohol at reasonable times. But she had broken her agreement and had telephoned to a wine merchant and had caused more alcohol to be sent whilst I was out. She had drunk at least 1 litre. The 1st of December, 19:30 hours, I found her again half drunk. It was necessary again to hide all the alcohol. The 2nd of December, I went to the Questura police in order to attempt to pacify the female porter in respect of her written complaint concerning my sister and her maid. In this, I was unsuccessful. I was told that this charge was going forward before the Prefettura court, this at the express request of the female porter. This woman was a concierge rather than a porter in sense of carrying bags. In the evening, I attended a cocktail party given by the Dysons in charge of Shell Mex in Rome in the stead of my sister. She did not feel well. The 5th of December, half drunk at the evening meal and afterwards.
Einen wunderschönen Grüß Gott. Hier ist Frau Kiepert Hildesheim.
Ja.
6th of December. I visited Dr. Angelotti in order to discuss the habitual drunkenness of my sister. I was quite desperate, not knowing how best to help her. The 7th of December, drunk from 20:30 until 22:30 hours. The 9th of December, I went in my sister's stead to a cocktail party given by the Princess Christiana Torolonia at the Palazzo Torolonia. I returned at 21:30 hours and found my sister drunk again. As usual, I was instructed to tell the princess and her friends that my sister had the Asiatica flu. This story had by now worn somewhat thin, to say the least of things, and her friends had made this clear to me at the party. The 10th of December, I spent the day with my friend Principe Edmundo Rospoli. We were engaged on our mutual hobby of high-fidelity sound experiment. I did not leave his flat until the evening. I returned to my sister's flat and found her very drunk in bed at 20:30 hours. She had unplugged the telephone, and hence I had been unable to ring her up from Prince Rospoli's home. The 11th of December, I went alone in my sister's stead to a lunch at 13:30 hours given by Marchese Giulio Marconi. She remained in bed. Dr. Angelotti came 1800 to 1900 hours. I had requested him to call in order we speak with my sister concerning her drunkenness, with a view to her taking a cure. He talked very seriously with her, telling her of the terrible consequences of habitual alcoholism, and gave her certain tablets. She promised she would take these, and indeed took the first one. The 12th of December, 09:10 hours, she refused to take further tablets. The 13th of December, she went to Dr. Angelotti and under his auspices had her chest subjected to X-ray examination, likewise her throat. This was in connection with her perpetual complaint of colds and chest troubles. In the evening, she was half drunk. The 14th of December, thunder and tempest from 2200 until 0400 hours on the 15th of December. My sister was half drunk in the evening and remained up and on her feet most of the night, having first slept off the immediate effects of the drink. At 0515 hours on the 15th of December, she entered my room allegedly to seek the telephone. The 15th of December, 1725 hours, half drunk. 17:45 hours, she went to bed and slept. The 16th of December, she went to bed from 1700 to 1800 hours. Then, whilst I was out, she drank 1.5 litres of wine and half a bottle of martini vermouth. At this time, the servant was also out doing the shopping. 20:30 hours, I found her in bed sleeping and drunk. Later, she got up, switched on the television receiver, and seated herself before it without looking at it and without taking in any part of the programme. I telephoned Dr. Angelotti. The 20th of December. In the evening, she was half drunk before we went out to a cocktail party given by the Brencialias. We came back at 21:30 hours. She was drunk, offensive and bellicose. She sprayed DDT aerosol all over the kitchen with malicious intent, stating that she was doing this in order to prevent the preparation of a meal for Mima and myself by poisoning the atmosphere. She, being drunk, did not wish to eat anything. The 21st of December, I met Dr. Angelotti by chance whilst walking along the Corso at 2000 hours approximately and discussed my sister's case briefly with him. 2100 hours to 2200 hours, she was half drunk. 23:55 hours, she was sleeping in an alcoholic stupor on a couch in the drawing room with the television set on, and with two straw-bound wine flasks, each having a capacity of 2 litres, empty beside her. In effect, she had consumed almost half a gallon of wine. I carried her to bed. At 0001 hours, on the 22nd of December, She got up from her bed and went to the cupboard which had been locked by me and which contained the alcohol in the hall. My sister possesses two dogs, a valuable Doberman Pinscher which had been given to her by her ex-lover. This dog is named Cesare. She also possesses a small Welsh corgi known as Lucrezia Borgia in brackets. She is very much attached to both these dogs to the point where they are almost as children to her. They lived upon her bed, which was ruined by the shedding of large quantities of dog's hair and by soiling. In addition, Cesare, having suffered from distemper, from which he nearly died at an early age, suffers, amongst other things, from urinary incontinence, which results in a great deal of mess and extra work in the household, to say nothing of ruined carpets, mattresses and bedding. On this occasion, my sister called to the first of these dogs, saying, "Poor Cesare, he wants to go out. Come, come out." Then she attempted to open the china cupboard, which contained the alcohol, saying, and evidently thinking that she wished to let the dogs out. Evidently she thought that the door of the china cupboard containing the wine was the entrance door to the flat leading into the open air. I again caused her to go to bed. The 22nd of December, half drunk from 22:30 until 23:15 hours. The 24th of December, Mimma, the servant, discovered three empty bottles, Campari soda, hidden in the bathroom. The 25th of December, Christmas, 21:10 hours, I found a 2-litre empty wine flask, straw-bound, hidden beneath her dressing table behind its curtains in her bedroom. Also hidden there.
Mein lieber Walter, heute ist der 22. Januar 1970.
Also hidden there was an empty glass with just a few drops of wine in it. She was in bed talking very strangely. Prior to this, at 20:00 hours, she had been savage and had shouted because I had explained to her that her friends had found out about her habitual drunkenness. I refused to go to a party with her by reason of her drunken condition. She went there alone at 22:00 hours, driving her own motor car. I implored her to take a taxi because she was in no state to drive a car, but she refused, insisting, as she always did, that when under the influence of alcohol, she drives far more brilliantly than when sober. Before leaving, she threatened me with a glass, wishing to strike me with it upon the head. She returned at 00:25 hours, thanks to God, without having put up a black, or so she said. The 26th of December, at 10:15 hours, she refused to make an appointment with Dr. Angelotti, saying, "Let me sleep." The 27th of December, she drank wine and probably vermouth. A bottle was empty afterwards, before going to Dr. Angelotti. After 11:30 hours, we went to Dr. Angelotti. She told him that I exaggerated everything and that she drinks only a little. In order to compel her to go to the doctor, I had first to threaten to leave her and to go to England at once if she did not go to the doctor immediately. At this, she went to him, but only as a result of this threat. At 22:40 hours, she went to look at the television. I was not sure whether she was drunk again or not. In any case, she did not wish to go to bed until very late.
Und war plötzlich da.
At this point,
die Uhr ist jetzt gestellt worden. Ich müsste ihm sagen, es tut mir furchtbar leid, ich bin nicht angezogen, nichts ist gemacht worden.
At this point, we come to the end of the translation from the Italian of the original document compiled by me for the benefit of the Italian doctors who were dealing with my sister's case. And from now on, we go over to the diary of 1958. It must, however, be said that all the entries for January 1958 referring to drunkenness were struck out by my sister in ball pen, in order to obliterate any recording of her extraordinary behaviour. This was done by my sister on or about the 9th of January 1958, and I had to rely on my memory in reinserting the entries from that date for the preceding days of January.
Oh, mein Gott, da klingelt. Was ist denn das? Ach, das ist Telefon, das soll sich selbst antworten. Deine Ärztin wäre gar nicht zufrieden. mit deinem Zustand. Weder mit den Nerven, noch mit den Kreislaufen. Ach, diesen Husten. Ach, ich bestrahle jetzt, das ist angenehm. Und, dass sie in Sorge war um dich. Das Ganze tut mir sehr leid. Ich habe ihr gleich gesagt...
You've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. The tale of Cecilia Foley will continue at a later date.
Der eine verursacht der andere und zum Teil natürlich umgekehrt. Man muss sehr aufpassen für das Alkohol. Du machst dich völlig kaputt mit deinem Alkohol. Es macht unter anderem natürlich den Kreislauf mit kaputt, das ist selbstverständlich, und die Nerven. Du hast mir öfter angerufen aus Deutschland in der vorweihnachtlichen Zeit. Und jedes Mal habe ich gemerkt, ich möchte nicht sagen, dass du betrunken warst, das warst du bestimmt nicht, das geht zu weit, aber man merkte doch, dass deine Stimme in etwa lallte, manchmal. So, dass man sagen könnte, ja, also etwas Alkohol spielt zweifelsohne mit eine Rolle in dieses Gespräch. Und als deine Freundin mit telefonierte, sie sagte gleich, und man merkte es auch an die Stimme, ja, wir feiern nämlich Weihnachten schon voraus, und das war schon lange vor Weihnachten. Walter, es tut mir leid, dass ich dir das sagen muss, aber weißt du, du hast, soweit ich feststelle, Sehnsucht nach Nachrichten und Mitteilungen von mir. Du weißt aber, wie ich bin, meine Stärke und meine Schwäche. Und eine von meinen Schwächen liegt in die schriftliche Seite. Ich bin eben nicht ein Mensch, der viel schreibt. Ich korrespondiere so wenig wie nur möglich. Ich vernachlässige Korrespondenz. Ich habe es seit jeher gemacht. Ich werde es wahrscheinlich immer tun. Ich schreibe nur dann, wenn ich muss. Und weil ich geschäftlich leider relativ viel schreiben muss, kommt dieses im Vordergrund und alles andere im Hintergrund. Du musst dich damit abfinden, dass wenn du Kontakte mit mir haben willst, das geht nur so lange, wie du und ich in dieselbe Stelle sind. Sobald der eine sich von der anderen entfernt, hört diesen Kontakt zum größten Teil auf. Denn ich bin nicht ein Briefschreibemensch. Ich bin nicht dafür verantwortlich, dass du dich von hier entfernt hast. Du hast das freiwillig gemacht. Sollst du durch, natürlich, selbstverständlich. Sollst du zu jeder Zeit abfliegen, wenn du willst. Kannst immer zurückkommen, wenn du willst. Je nachdem, pendeln, so oft du willst. Dann musst du aber dich damit abfinden, dass wenn du nicht hier bist, dass du nur die wenigste Kontakt mit mir hast. Denn ich habe furchtbar viel zu tun. Und ich kann nicht zusätzlich noch Privatkorrespondenz führen. Es tut mir auch sehr leid über deinen Onkel Otto mit seinen sehr schweren und schlimmen Krankheit, der, wie ich erfahre, so, das war der Gesichtspartie. Jetzt kommt der Rücken. Es tut mir sehr leid über deinen Onkel Otto mit seinen schwere Krankheit, der, wie ich höre, möglicherweise tödlich auswirken könnte. Und ich möchte gern, dass ich da irgendwas tun könnte, aber leider kann ich nicht. Nur der allmächtige Gott entscheidet über diesen Fragen, mit natürlich eine gewisse Beihilfe von Ärzten, aber viel können Ärzte auch nicht tun, auch heute nicht. Ich glaube, man muss beten für ihn. Davon bin ich überzeugt. Du sollst ein bisschen für ihn beten, Walter. Nicht ein bisschen, sondern öfter.